Welcome to On the Edge with SICK, the podcast where we explore individuals and organizations on the edge of social innovation through a design lens. We're your hosts, Nita and Sylvia, co-founders of SICK. Today, we welcome Julie Gilbert, an independent consultant and coach at Julie Gilbert Consulting. Julie has over 25 years of experience working with public sector and nonprofit organizations in the community and healthcare sectors. She has worked in program evaluation and has worked internationally with large organizations, including the Movember Foundation, to assess the impact of funded programs for men living with prostate cancer. She has also worked with grassroots organizations with staffs as small as 5 or 6. Julie is now focused on coaching and teaching organizations as they strategically plan for impact, measure, and communicate the differences they make in the world. Julie uses the tools she gained in her PhD training in health services research and designs measurement projects in a customized way, tailoring approaches to impact measurement in ways that best suit an organization's needs. Julie, thanks for being here today with us.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to join you today on your podcast.
So we're going to start with an icebreaker question that we ask all of our guests. What does On the Edge, which is obviously the title of our podcast, mean to you?
That's a great question and really cool that you ask everybody, because I'm sure you get a wide variety of responses. On the Edge means to me that you're somehow at a boundary. And to me, boundaries have always been a little bit problematic. And I've found in my work that I'm kind of a boundary spanner. So when I'm on the edge, I'm looking from one perspective into another. So for instance, I studied in basic science for my undergrad, but then I ventured into more of a population-based scientific study. And when I was in academia, I was always looking for more and more applied ways of doing my work. And now that I'm, skilled in evaluation, I'm looking at ways of pushing those boundaries into, what is the impact that programs are trying to make. So I feel like I'm always at an edge and looking across the boundary at sort of what lies ahead. It also reminds me of a book that was published a while ago called The Bleeding Edge, is a little bit, it's a kind of a provocative term, but sort of referring to technology or innovation that not only moves us forward, but is risky and disruptive and challenging for society. And so I like the On the Edge because it brings back memories of that bleeding edge notion, which has always been a little bit intriguing to me.
Wow, I love that response. You're right. All of our guests give us such a different response. So we're going to, at some point, review those responses and do an On the Edge with On the Edge episode, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Julie, we wanted to dive into your background, your passions, and your work. Can you tell us about your professional journey?
Sure. It's been kind of a winding road, I would say. I started my studies in the basic sciences and physiology and anatomy. And soon after my undergrad, realized that I was attracted to more of a population-based preventative approach to health. And so found myself studying epidemiology, which I really enjoyed, and looked at population risk factors for cancer, for different chronic conditions, and worked as a research analyst in that area for a while, and then moved on to do a PhD in health services research. So not looking clinically at questions, but at the care delivery, trying to optimize the quality of care and the efficiency and all sort of different domains of how we can improve healthcare delivery, which I think led me more into evaluation because it's a broad approach to questioning whether a program or an activity has been effective and has reached its goals. I moved, you know, I'm still affiliated with the University of Toronto, so I have academic linkages, which I find really valuable and, you know, fulfilling. But my work has become much more applied, and moving from, you know, a context where we're asking questions out of curiosity in more of an academic setting to questions that are very much going to be informing decision making. And that's where I find myself now, doing evaluation, doing some research, doing coaching and teaching, and really just trying to take my toolkit and apply it in a way that's, you know, going to help people achieve their purpose.
Wow, that's very interesting, Julie. You did mention that you do some coaching and consulting work. Can you speak to what the difference is between your consulting work and the work related to your Impact Institute?
Sure. Thanks for that question. And it's one that I've been really trying to make sure that there's sort of clarity for others, for the stakeholders, for the people that I work with, for my colleagues. So the past number of years, as I've worked in, you know, healthcare agencies, I worked at Cancer Care Ontario for over 11 years and did a lot of program evaluation in that role. That has really enabled me to take on consulting with a lot of experience and a lot of, you know, different types of evaluations, many of which are mixed methods. So there's quantitative and qualitative. So a lot of skills that are being put to use in that project work. The Impact Institute is a more recent program. It's a learning program that I've developed and continue to develop, where I provide coaching and learning opportunities. It's all in the area of impact, impact assessment, impact measurement, trying to sort of clarify what impact is and what it means to different organizations, and also communicating impact, because that's a big piece of it. And there are more effective and less effective ways of communicating impact. One of the more effective ones is storytelling. So there's been a big sort of interest and a theme that has developed in that area. So how to effectively communicate stories of impact. So the learning program mm-hmm. is coaching. It's I'm involved with InnoWeave, which is a program run by the McConnell Foundation, where they match organizations, social enterprises, with coaches, and they have a roster of coaches, and the organizations and coaches come together. And then with funding from the InnoWeave program, we're able to deliver 6 or 8 months worth of coaching. So that's been a really enjoyable program that I continue to be involved with.
You're definitely filling a gap that I think is missing in a lot of organizations. I think that's something that's becoming, people are speaking more about impact. I don't think it was something that was as popular in the past. It was more about sort of like, how do we get there? But then once we get there, that's the end of the project. So I'm right. happy that you're working on this, because I think this is a very important aspect of any project, evaluating the impact.
Yeah, I agree. Like, especially in the design world, where you're coming in, say, as a design consultant, and the project goes to implementation and evaluation, and then you're no longer involved. And that's why we kind of wanted to bring you in and speak about, well, what happens afterwards? How do you evaluate impact?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and
it is a challenge, because I think in many different areas, you know, healthcare, social care, community, and you know, certainly in the sort of for-profit world, in many different organizations, you know, you have a project, it's managed through with all sorts of timelines and deliverables, And there's a certain amount of monitoring that goes on that really is much more geared towards the process of how and, you know, along what timelines it was implemented. So the deliverables, as far as, you know, a near-term evaluation goes, are often whether milestones were hit and whether the project was able to complete all of the activities that were set out. But in terms of social impact and impact on whatever beneficiaries were involved, if you say you have a not-for-profit or even a for-profit organization that has customers in mind at the end of the day, you know, what impact did your work have on those people? How were they affected? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, not only those people, but how were others affected too? So were there, knock-on effects? Were there environmental effects? Were all of the sort of social considerations taken into account? So there are, you know, intended impacts, but they're also unintended too. And we often overlook those.
The next piece that we wanted to ask about, which you already mentioned, was social impact.
Right.
And why is that essential for organizations that want to demonstrate social impact? And it could be the nonprofit, that's their like reason for being, or it could mm-hmm. be a for-profit that really wants to show positive effects on society.
Right, absolutely. So I'll break it down into just those two categories. So for not-for-profits, impact, you know, their mission is often a social enterprise mission. Mm-hmm. And impact, you know, they're often in the practice of measuring and monitoring outputs. So, perhaps donations or how those donations were used, you know, how the dollars were spent type of thing. But when it comes to actual impact, we know from, you know, public surveys, both in Canada and the US, that impact is one of the things that donors look for. They look for organizations to communicate what they want their impact to be and what their impact is. So, you know, in Canada, a recent survey, the Giving Report, pegged it at around 65% of the public were looking to support charities that clearly communicate their impact. And in the US, similar surveys come up with kind of similar figures. About 58% are looking to donate to organizations that communicate their impact. So it's big. It's something that people want to see. When we're talking about the private sector, there's been a sea change that I think everyone will have noticed over the past, 10 or 15 years, and that's a move towards more corporate social responsibility. And there have been explicit statements been made by the corporate sector that corporations should not just be thinking about their shareholders, but they need to be aware of how their work impacts on largely stakeholders. So it's the employees, it might be vendors, it might be communities, it might be the environment, it might be social equity impact. So there's a huge sort of awakening to social responsibility. And part of that and impact investing is a kind of a big indicator of the importance of that. There's been a move towards different metrics that speak to more social impact on environmental, social, and governance issues, like the ESG measures. And corporations are struggling with a new set of impact measurements, and they're trying to standardize and really understand whether, you know, or how to adapt to a world where they're being, but where investors are judging corporations not only by their financial success or performance, but also their social impact.
Mm-hmm. And how might they do this? Like, what kind of tools might be able to help them?
Some of the tools that that we provide or that are available to not-for-profits, let's say, or, you know, these can also be used, I think, in the for-profit world. The data strategy approach and building from what you have currently to what you want to be doing in the future. So you might be starting mm-hmm. off with just looking at how your business is or your organization is functioning and your staff complement, or whether, you know, you have the space to do what you want. So the very early days, you can measure things that are just really getting you off the ground. But as an organization mm-hmm. matures, it's going to want to measure how well its processes are working, what the outputs that it's achieving, how many people are taking part in or benefiting from their programs. And then as you move further with more resources to measure with and more of a sort of mature measurement strategy, you can start measuring outcomes and how beneficiaries might be benefiting, how their lives are different because of having participated in or having access to your organization's work. And so and then from the beneficiaries piece to a more of a social perspective, it takes a little bit of time and effort to really understand how the world is changing, how your beneficiaries, and maybe that's a matter of scale. And as you grow and are able to offer your program to more and more people, well, then your social impact is going to grow accordingly. So there's data measurement strategies, and the Stepping Stones to Impact framework that I've developed is one type of strategy that organizations could use to help them map a course through their impact measurement journey. For instance, journey mapping is a tool. It's been used in customer service mm-hmm. and in the corporate world for a while, looking at customer journey mapping from a marketing standpoint and sort of inputting into advertising strategy. But community journey mapping is a newer version of mapping that helps tell a story of how an organization or people benefiting from the work of a not-for-profit, let's say, have changed, where they started off, the issues or the question, the problem that was there to be solved at the beginning, and how either an organization or a community moved through some of the steps and, you know, was able to grow and develop its program. And then accordingly, how the beneficiaries were able to benefit from what was happening. And then at the end, you have a point at which, and I imagine this journey is never actually over, but you can do mapping, you know, at any point in time to see how far you've come and where the outcomes are at, and, you know, as far as you're able to measure, how people are benefiting from your work, including at the community level.
Yeah, that's a great example. Definitely journey mapping is being used more and more in sectors like social service and healthcare. Mm-hmm. And then you did also mention around diversity and inclusion and the role of impact measurement. Like, how might impact measurement be more equitable and inclusive, especially within, say, marginalized communities?
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of ways I guess this question could be answered. And one has to do with, I think what we were just talking about, is including those communities in co-designing mm-hmm. some of the measurement. Because the questions that are asked, the way in which they're asked, the language that's used mm-hmm. to pose questions, can be inclusive or it can be extremely alienating. So I think that even, you know, co-designing measurement activities from the get-go and in evaluation practice, that is part of best practice, having stakeholders around the table from as early as possible, even from the design stage, like designing what an evaluation is going to look like. And certainly the measurement piece of going out and asking people, you know, even how that's done, whether it's face-to-face or whether that's done through survey or whether there's data that exists and might be repurposed, involving communities and members of the community that might, you know, have different experiences, that might come from equity seeking groups, I think is important as much as possible to involve them in some of that measurement activity. And then if we think about, you know, individuals' histories and their experiences, and that there's, you know, there are groups and individuals who've experienced trauma, whether it's related to perhaps an event during their lives or context in which they grew up, or groups, collective trauma who might have experienced historical inequities or historical, you know, much more traumatic events, or even racism, that you have individuals who are coming with lived experience of trauma. And we have to be really careful when we're measuring and when we're asking folks to reflect on their, perhaps their past or their feelings about, you know, being involved in certain, with certain organizations or programs, and coming at measurement with a trauma-informed lens is extremely important. And we know from more sort of therapeutic practices, social work and psychology, for example, where trauma-informed practice has been introduced and is considered best practice today, we need to adopt some of those principles in our measurement and evaluation, because visiting some of the experiences and talking to people who have had trauma in their lives, it's really important to avoid re-traumatization and unnecessary, you know, exploration, trying to extract information where it's really quite sensitive and vulnerable for that individual. So trauma-informed evaluation has become or is slowly becoming something that evaluators are paying attention to. And I think measurement has to also take heed of some of that practice in order to be, to retain, you know, the equity and the inclusivity among groups that have some, have historically not been approached in the best of ways.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot here. I wasn't even aware of trauma-informed evaluation. Right. So thank you for bringing that up.
It's an area where, you know, there, it's still developing and it's still borrowing from a lot of the disciplines that only have only recently started thinking about it themselves.
Mm-hmm. It really underscores when you said you're a boundary spanner in the very beginning, and how you use so many other disciplines to do the work that you do. So speaking about the work that you do, can you describe an example project that you've been involved with, like to make it this whole process a little bit more concrete for our listeners?
Sure, sure. In my bio up front, I think Sylvia mentioned briefly my work with the Movember Foundation. And I recently worked with them to develop an impact report based on a multi-year, multi-jurisdictional program of funding, basically, where they directed some of the Movember funds raised back into programmatic work, which they do. They have a very robust program delivery, and some of it in this case was targeted towards men who've experienced prostate cancer, who have gone through treatment for prostate cancer, and are now living with side effects and the late effects of the cancer and its treatment. So prostate cancer, although highly treatable, leaves men often with symptoms such as urinary dysfunction, sexual dysfunction, pain, sometimes psychosocial effects like depression and troubles with their partners. Many of them are related to those mm-hmm. very symptoms. And so this program was geared towards interventions that would support men after having had an experience with prostate cancer. And so my task was sort of to roll up over 20 projects into sort of a summary report that overall document the impact of this program. And so part of the role was to do this quantitatively, was to look at which outcome measures had been used in each of the projects and summarize them in a sort of overarching way. So, there would be measures like prostate function or urinary function, not quantitatively because it wasn't sort of a meta-analysis, it wasn't conducive to meta-analysis, but just sort of in a descriptive way. And we also went to the any qualitative data that were available and drew out individuals' experience and their stories and their backgrounds and their reflections on their prostate cancer experience, but also their experience within this Movember-funded program of support. And so it was very eye-opening in a number of different ways. Number one, although the measures were different from project to project, there were some overarching commonalities between the experience that men relate to us. And some of it was just being able to talk to someone, to have sort of a navigator type of individual that they could reach and talk to about things that they couldn't really talk about with their mates, with their wives, with their colleagues, etc. So just being able to talk through some of the effects was really helpful. But what really came out in a very compelling way through the narratives was their ability to get back into their normal routine and do the things that they enjoyed doing. So for one gentleman, he was able to go back onto the golf course and play a complete round of golf, where previously he would have been running back and forth to the men's room, and it would have been highly disruptive and it made golf unenjoyable for him. So he was able to get back onto the golf course. In another instance, one man talked about the first soccer game or football game he was able to go to with his son, and they enjoyed a full game together. And again, he no longer had to worry about the symptoms that he'd been experiencing with regards to his urinary function. And so, this program made a difference to these men in ways that could not have been planned. We might have asked them, what are you able to do now that you might have not been able to do previously? But these came unsolicited as stories of impact and how these men had their lives impacted by this program, that they were able to get back to doing the things that they enjoyed doing with their with their family, with their friends. And it really contributed to gaining back a quality of life.
That's amazing.
Love yeah, those. I love hearing those qualitative stories versus quantitative statistics and numbers and that kind of thing. Right. Like it's the stories that you really remember, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Not the numbers so much.
Yeah. The qualitative is what gets people thinking. It gets to people's emotions, and it appeals to, you know, audiences, humanity. So that's what really brings it to life.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. So were those outcome measures valued, like, by whoever was the audience for these?
The stories, they were, absolutely. They were what people talked about. They were what resonated. You know, they remain in that narrative report because they are so illustrative of the difference that these programs made.
So as we wrap up this episode, Julie, what's one key takeaway that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I would like to encourage listeners to really explore what impact can mean to them, to their organizations, and not to be overwhelmed by the enormity of what impact could mean and, you know, what it might mean at a community level or as a social impact level, but just to start small, to start local. What impact might they be having? Might their program or their organization be having at the local level? Or from the point of view of, you know, how are people different when they first leave the room type of thing? And then start from there. Start growing and, you know, getting used to some of those perhaps more reachable measurement activities. And then moving on to more challenging, because the outcomes are sometimes challenging to measure. But there are a lot of different ways and supports, and there's technology that's available. I mean, social media is being used now for data collection. So folks should understand that there's lots of options, lots of technology and creativity that can be applied, and to not be overwhelmed by the prospect of setting off on an impact measurement journey.
Thank you, Julie. And how might our listeners connect with you?
Well, I would invite everyone to visit my website, which is www.juliegilbertconsulting.com, all one word. And as we talked about, the Impact Institute is my learning program for coaching and courses. And there's a page on my website. So look for the Impact Institute. And the course that's coming up next is on May 18th from 1 to 2:30 p.m. And it's called Stepping Stones to Impact, a short course for nonprofit and public sector leaders. I'm on Instagram and my handle is J_G_consulting. And you can also contact me and visit my page on LinkedIn.
Thanks so much, Julie. I love Stepping Stones to Impact. It really aligns with your philosophy, I guess, around starting where you are as an organization in terms of impact and then taking those steps to growing your impact.
Right, exactly.
Thank you for listening to On the Edge with your hosts, Nita and Sylvia. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others or drop a comment and rating. Head over to sickhealth.ca to learn more about SICK and check out all the links and resources in the episode show notes. Thanks and stay tuned for future podcast episodes with On the Edge with SICK.